I was talking with my wife the other day. She was relating a story to me that I thought I'd share with you. It's a few years back. And some of you know we have a Chevy Tahoe. It's like a blue-green color. There aren't that many of them. And we kind of like it, like the blue and the green all mixed and all that. And we've had it for, you know, a number of years now, about almost 10, I guess 10 years now. But it was, this is a few years ago. And she was coming out of a store. And as she walked out of the store, she did what you and I do, right? You get your keys out and you click and unlock your car. And then so she clicked and, you know, walked up to the car, opened the door, sat inside, and it just didn't seem right because there were car seats in the back, and our kids hadn't been in car seats in years. They were in school. They're like sippy cups. They had sippy cups in years. And so she took the key and it wouldn't fit in the ignition. She'd gotten into the wrong car. See, somebody had forgotten to lock their identical car that was parked right near ours. Think about it, right? You walk out and you click, and you walk up to your... I mean, there weren't very many of these blue-green Tahoes. We saw one the other day, but it's pretty rare to see them. It was unlocked, just like it should be. And then she's like, whoa, something ain't right here, right? And then, I don't know, we didn't talk about how quickly she got out. If it was me, I could not get out of there quickly enough, right? Because the owner of the sippy cups is going to show up, and you're going to be sitting right in her car. And so, of course, she looks over, and there's the real one, so to speak. But she knew something ain't right, right? All the signs were there that something ain't right. So we're doing a series that's called Harmony. When things are out of harmony, it's when something ain't right. See, God designed us to be in a relationship with Him that has harmony when things are right. But sometimes in our lives, things ain't right. And the signs are there. We can't always even know what it is. Sometimes we don't click in right away all the elements of what's making it not quite right. But God has designed us to have a relationship with Him that is right. And so we're taking this idea, this concept of harmony, and applying that towards our relationship with God. To be able to recognize those times in our lives, those areas in our lives that aren't in harmony with God, that aren't in agreement. And that's really the root of that word harmony, is this idea of agreement. So if we could be in harmony about an idea or a project, or in harmony about where a relationship is heading, or in harmony about a business direction, we could be in harmony about all kinds of things, but at the root of that is there's this agreement. And where's this agreement? When things are right, we're both on the right track or on the same track. Things are right. So we've used this as a theme to look at the Bible. And to look at the Bible in hopes that God would help us to see how we can be in harmony with Him. So I don't know how you are today, whether you're saying, you know, I feel good. I feel like, you know, my life is largely in harmony with God, maybe not perfect. Or maybe you're here and you're thinking, you know what, I need harmony because I know, I don't even know where, I don't even know what. So we used this illustration last week, and I won't do it all for you this week, but we used the airplane as an illustration. Some of you weren't here, and so this will be new, and some of you will be a reminder. But this is my radio control glider. And in case you weren't here last week, I will not be flying it today in the room. But there are two wings. Every airplane, every size, jumbo jets, rubber band powered airplanes, they're all the same, right? They all have two wings. And if you only have one wing, you can't fly. It's impossible. But when you have both wings fully operating the way they're supposed to, then the wings are in harmony with each other. So simply, the wings are these: truth and love. To bring it into our conversation here this morning, that when truth and love are in harmony, not love winning everything, if it's all about love in a relationship where someone is afraid to ever bring up anything, I'm not sure that relationship will have the depth or go to the height that it's designed to go to. Or if all someone talks about is truth and the love isn't there, is that relationship going to go to the height that it could, or to the depth that it could? I don't think it will either. And so we've taken a look at two sections of the Bible, 2 John and 3 John. In the Bible, there's one John, which is like five chapters long. It has five different large sections. And then right after that, they're written as letters. So the first one is 1 John. The second one is 2 John. The second letter written. And then the third one is 3 John. And in the first, or the second letter, I should say, in 2 John, he talked about their relationships. And he said, you know what? You love everybody so much that even those who are hurting your church, and even those who are who believe things that are destructive, even those people, you just welcome them in and you give them money and support their work so they can go out and teach more people destructive things. He says you love them so much, and he's not even against love, but he says, shouldn't that be balanced by truth? That at some point, shouldn't you say, I'm not sure I should be supporting someone who's teaching truth that's destructive for faith? That love should be balanced by truth. And now we're in 3 John in the next section, the next letter, and he's going to kind of take the opposite way. He's going to say the idea that you have this truth, but you know what? Really, it should be balanced by love as well. And so I thought I'd just bring this for you as a prop to take a look at as we look at this. Here's the thing. With God, the truth is God created us. And the truth is that God created us to have a relationship with Him. And the truth is that that relationship with Him became broken. The truth is that things ain't right. And that God knows it and that we know it. The truth is that part of the truth that is our failures that have brought us out of harmony with God, that God is the one who brought the solution for that to bring us back in harmony with Him by making things right. Right? So we just got to remember that's the center of all truth is our separation from God and God sending His Son Jesus so that we would be brought into agreement and harmony with Him. By placing our faith in Jesus Christ and His work on the cross, that's Good Friday, His sacrifice for our sins, earning forgiveness, and then His resurrection on Easter Sunday, coming back to life to introduce us to a relationship with God so that when we experience that, things are made right. That's the start. That's the start of all of it. And then we bring in these ideas of truth. And love, and how do we live those out? And so you might remember a little bit about it last week. I won't go into too much detail on it, except for to say it's always about love and truth in these chapters. So I want to invite you to stand. We're going to look at 3 John. And as we do that, I'm going to read it out loud. You can follow along. And as you follow along, look for these words, truth, and these words, love. Here they are. It says, the elder, bless you, to my dear friend Gaius, whom I love in the truth. Dear friend, I pray that you may enjoy good health and that all may go well with you, even as your soul is getting along well. It gave me great joy to have some brothers come and tell about your faithfulness to the truth and how you continue to walk in the truth. I have no greater joy than to hear that my children are walking in the truth. Dear friend, you're faithful in what you are doing for the brothers, even though they're strangers to you. And then he says this, they've told the church about your love. Everybody knows. They've told the church about your love. You will do well to send them on their way in a manner worthy of God, in a manner consistent with love. It was for the sake of the name. They weren't all called Christians yet. So the name is the name of Jesus. It was for the sake of the name that they went out, receiving no help from the pagans, just those who don't believe. We ought therefore to show hospitality to such men so that we may work together for the truth. I wrote to the church, but Diotrephes, who loves to be first, will have nothing to do with us. So if I come, I will call attention to what he is doing, gossiping maliciously about us. Not satisfied with that, he refuses to welcome the brothers. He also stops those who want to do so and puts them out of the church. Dear friend, do not imitate what is evil, but what is good. Anyone who does what is good is from God, and anyone who does what is evil has not seen God. Demetrius, is well spoken of by everyone, and even by the truth itself. We also speak well of him, and you know that our testimony is true. And then it ends, he says, I have much to write to you, but I do not want to do so with pen and ink. I hope to see you soon, and we will talk face to face. And that word, that phrase, face to face, is actually literally mouth to mouth. And we only, you know, use that, right? We're going to resuscitate someone, right? Is how we use that phrase. But it makes more sense to talk mouth to mouth, right? Like I would talk with my mouth and then you would talk with your mouth rather than just we would sit there and, right, talk with just our face. But it makes sense that English, I'm supposed to say it this way. He says, and then we'll talk face to face. Peace to you. The friends here send their greetings and greet the friends there by name. So go ahead and be seated. We'll take a look at this section. So, as you might remember, John is the one who is the elder. He's one of the apostles, one of Jesus' 12 closest followers, and most people think he's the only one still alive. So he doesn't say, hey, all the elders are talking. He's saying, I'm the last one. And I knew Jesus, and I walked with Jesus, and I saw Jesus when he was alive on the earth. I saw Jesus when he died. I saw Jesus when he came back alive. He's the one. So he says, you know, I'm writing to you, the elder. Some people say he didn't put his name on it because of potential persecution at that time, and that may not be true. So he's writing to, he's the spiritual elder, and we don't know who Gaius is exactly, but we know a couple of things, right, just by reading it. He says, I pray you may enjoy good health and that all may go well with you, even as your soul is getting along well. And he says, basically, I know your soul is healthy and thriving. I know your soul is healthy and good and strong and it's great in here. But the implication is that he's got some kind of an illness inside. So he says, my prayer is that with the health and vitality of your soul, that your body would match your soul. Which is kind of fun to think about, right? I pray that your physical body would match the state or the health of your soul. Like that instantly it would reflect it. So think about this. If your soul is spiritually healthy and strong, right? I feel like if that was true of me and my physical body matched it, I would suddenly be like a foot taller, right? It'd be like, wow, look at those biceps, you know. Now, I'm not trying to present myself as someone who's spiritually, you know, everything, okay? But if that was true, and if that prayer was answered, but what if the opposite was true? What if my spirit, the state of my spirit, my soul, was unhealthy and kind of weak, right? Then if God answered that prayer in a literal way, right, suddenly I'd be a foot shorter, right? Suddenly I'd be a whole lot weaker. Somebody, I'd sort of be the runt. And I just think it's an interesting turn of phrase that he uses in this prayer. He says, I know your soul has this vitality and health to it, and I'm praying that your physical body will have the same. I don't think this is the point of this whole section. But it's not terrible to think about either, is it? Think about the vitality of our soul. Think about the health of our soul. Because I think about the health of my body a lot. Maybe you do too. I don't eat particularly well, but I think about it all the time. I thought, I have salad, vegetables, fruit. Well, no, I don't really eat fruit very much, so I don't think about it that much, right? I don't eat kale, so sorry. I'm not against it, but I just, you know, it's what it is. Okay, so there you go. I don't know why I'm talking about that kale exactly. It just popped into my head. So those of you who love it, excellent. Keep up the good work. I do think about that, though. I think about my physical health, and I think about my, you know, my stress, and I think about exercising and doing cardio. So, you know, I think about those kind of things and think about all that. And I wonder if sometimes that's what we think about as a people. And he's like, no, I know your soul. It's healthy, vital, strong, because God is in there and God is working. Not the whole point, but an interesting side note. He goes on in verse 3, right? We read this. It gives me great joy to have some brothers come and tell about your faithfulness. So John obviously isn't there at the church he's writing to. He's writing the letter. And he's had some people show up and they say, you're faithful to the truth, verse 3, and you continue to walk in the truth. And it gives me so much joy to know that you are a man of truth, that you know the truth, you live the truth. You've learned the truth. It's become a part of your life. You've worked it through everything. There's no, let me help you think of it this way. that you've taken and said, this is the truth, and you won't let anything dilute it. You don't have any Buddhism in your faith. You don't have any astrology in your faith. No philosophy has snuck in and diluted your faith. You haven't thrown out part of the truth. It's not worded exactly that way, but I think those are fair things. You haven't decided that the majority in culture is the rule. You haven't decided that if your friends all think something, that maybe you should reconsider what's true and what's right and what's wrong, and rethink everything. You haven't let impulse or desire or addiction change what you know to be true. You see that? He's saying truth. You haven't thrown out part of it. It hasn't evolved or changed. You are truth. You've learned the truth and you've lived the truth. I think I may have shared some details of this with you prior, and I won't give all the details. But I did read an article about a pastor whose church was over 10,000 people. He was on Time Magazine's 100 Most Influential People. He's a big deal. And he said, if the church is built on a community that's going to adhere, as is his word, to the scriptures, it will be, and I quote, irrelevant. Like, if you're going to say there's right and there's wrong and there's truth, you're worthless, has no value. Well, he's not the pastor of that church anymore. Enough on that. See, truth rings true, and truth rings loud. And truth rings clear. And it isn't situational, and it isn't relational. See, Gaius has this authenticity about him. He has an authenticity of his life, and of his heart, and of his faith. How do you know this is true of you? How do I know this is true of me? What would the letter be written about, right? It's fair for us to ask that question. If we're looking at the plane and we're on the wing of truth, just for another minute here, if we're on that wing, how would it be written? And so four ways for you to evaluate to see if your life is in, now we're going to come back to the theme, if your life is in harmony with truth. Okay, four things. Here you go. They're very simple. They're four C's. Contemplation. What do you think about? Conversation. What do you talk about? Calendar. What do you spend your time doing? And cash. Where's your money go? All right, four simple questions to say, what about my life? How's the wing on this side, right? How's the truth part? Contemplation up here. What do I think about? Conversations, the things that I talk about. And the calendar, what are the things I do, the places I go? And lastly, the cash, where does all my money end up? To see if this has a strong current in my life. Fair questions, I think. But John says, look, you are a man of truth, but your truth has to be balanced by love. And that's where we go here with this. Because truth without love makes someone harsh. Truth without love makes someone mean. That's where brutality comes from. So he says, this is how someone committed to the truth lives. Verse 5, dear friend, you're faithful in what you are doing for the brothers. Even though they're strangers to you, they have told the church about your love. You will do well to send them on their way in a manner worthy of God. He says, as we read, it was for the sake of the name that they went out, receiving no help from the pagans. We ought therefore to show hospitality to such men so that we may work together for the truth. Don John says, people have been talking about you. People who have come into the church, who have come into the church family, into the church community. And you know what they say? I see the truth that you live by it. And it's brought you stability and consistency in your life and in your relationships. I see all that. But you know what they see? They see the love. They see that this truth isn't like, oh, this is the way it is. This is the way it is. But that it's balanced, that it's surrounded in a culture of love. He says, the church told me about you. You treat them well. You care for people when they come through. You're kind to them. And he's talking about people who come through. Remember the culture last week? In the church, there were traveling preachers that would come through. And it was a normal part of the church because at that time, the church was brand new. Right? The church was 30 years old. Forever in the history of the world, it was 30 years old. It wasn't like, well, it's a 30-year-old church, right? We have churches that are 1,000 years old. Not in this country, Europe. In this country, a couple hundred years old, right? But it was just barely born. So people who were great communicators who could teach the truth of God, they would travel from church to church. And in 2 John, when we read that, some would come in and they would not be teaching the truth of God. It would be destructive. And he'd say, wait a second, you can't let the destructive people reign. They need some truth. But those who come in speaking the truth, he says, those people you've loved. And then when they go to the next place, love them out too. Because they've got to go do some other work. They've got to go teach in some other churches. Keep the love flowing. Make sure that your truth is balanced by love. And so we're, as a church, wondering, maybe not right yet, but in the future, who is it that's like that? Maybe not someone who bounces from church to church, because that's not our culture here, but maybe someone who's in some other country somewhere that we could form an alliance with, that we could love somewhere in some country, that we could say, you know what, we're going to love you. You need something. We hope that you will be the first people you call because you're doing God's work there, because you're sharing the love of Jesus and the truth of God to people who don't know. So we're not quite ready for that yet, I don't think, to start that tomorrow. But we're beginning to think about it, beginning to pray about it. And I hope you'll join and pray on that as well. But not everyone is like that. This is Diotrephes, the next person, right, in the passage. You know what he likes? Himself. You know what his agenda is? Himself. You know who he likes to listen to? Himself. You know who he likes to show hospitality to? Himself. You know who he respects? Himself. He says, I wrote to the church, verse 9, but Diotrephes, who loves to be first, will have nothing to do with us. See, he focuses so much on being first. Right? And this is right on the tail of love. He says, look, listen, Gaius, you are a man of truth, but man, you love people so much. And then there's Diotrephes. What does he love? It's right there so that we understand. And then he says this great little phrase. He says, verse 10, so if I come, I will call attention to what he is doing, gossiping maliciously about us. And I just had a chance to look at these words a little bit. And this word for gossiping, it really is the word babbling. And if you go to the word babbling, you can almost even hear the word that is at the root of it. The word is bubbles. And they wouldn't have thought that, oh, when you talk about gossiping, you're talking about bubbles. But it sort of evolved over time that word became the word. And so I like props. How about you? Well, I'm going to do it anyway. So if you don't like it, then I don't know. I'm not a very good bubble blower, apparently, though. So when I blow the bubbles, some are smaller, some are bigger. You can just watch them. And you get the idea of when he says, this is what Diotrephes is doing. He's blowing bubbles. What are bubbles made of? I'm terrible at this. What are bubbles made of? Yeah, a teeny, teeny, tiny bit of soap. And what else? Nothing. Air? There's nothing in there. He says, look, this is what he's doing. Yeah, he's taking this teeny, teeny, tiny bit of something, which really is nothing. Like, you couldn't even find it here on the floor if you came looking for that bubble. Maybe if you had a magnifying glass, and maybe you could focus, you know, 6 pairs of glasses, each one magnified 1,000 times. Maybe you could find something. So I love the word for gossip here, malicious gossip, if we have it in our English. He says, you know what? He's just stirring up nothing. He's bringing about nothing. And he says, I want you to understand, there's people who live truth and they balance it out with love. And there's people who say stuff and there's nothing to it. And you need to know that there's no truth to it. So you know the kind of people that do this, right? Diotrephes is insecure. And he's threatened by anyone who's around him. He's threatened by anyone who's getting respect. He's threatened by anyone who is seen to be important. And so when somebody important comes, when somebody who has value comes, he's so insecure in his own self that he feels threatened in his own self. So the only way to try to preserve his importance, right, is to kind of blow these bubbles that get everybody's attention for just a second on people around him, on how bad they are. So when the bubbles go away, who's left standing? Diotrephes. But I'm still here, he would say, I think. Bubbles. Thank you to the Marbot family for the bubbles. So John says, look, when I come, I got to point this out. Right? I have to say to him, this is not what love is or what love does. See, Diotrephes' fear is to be disrespected or disregarded. So he's trying to promote himself in all this. And he won't welcome anybody else, right? He won't welcome John. None of that is part of that at all. And then in verse 11, it says, dear friend, do not imitate what is evil, but what is good. Anyone who does what is good is from God. Anyone who does what is evil has not seen God. He says, there's evil and there's good. And don't fall under Diotrephes' spell. Don't fall under the spell of someone who wants to have you join them in criticizing someone else. So recently there's a church in Orange County who I had a lot of relationships with, and they were going through a bunch of strife, struggling over direction. And there was kind of a split was part of the church. And it was kind of sad. But here's what was fascinating. What's fascinating is side A, if you will, would talk to me. And I was good friends with side A people. And they would say, well, you know, let me tell you about side B. And I'd say, you know, I know side B. And I love those people. And they'd say, oh, I know it, but it's okay. And then I'd be over with the side B people. And I'd talk with them, and they'd say, you know about those side A people? You know what I would say? I love those people over there. Oh, it's okay, it's okay. And they would talk to me about them. And I realized that both side A and side B needed the same message. And maybe it's the Diotrephes needed the message too. And here was the message that I gave to both of them. It was this. It was, first, they're not as bad as you think they are. I know them both. And then here's the second part of the message. You're not as good as you think you are. And that's always the one that stopped them. Right? They're like, well, okay, maybe side A isn't as bad as... Maybe it's not, you know, maybe I'm just overreacting a little bit. Yeah, maybe you are. And maybe side B isn't, yeah. But maybe you're not. And in that they're not as bad and you're not as good, there's a sense where you can just feel the pressure go down and the humility come in. And in the humility, they're able to say, what's the truth and what's the love that is important here? The truth of God and His love. That's what's important here. And that's what was important in that church. That's what's important in this church. See, in 3 John, he says, let your truth be balanced by love. He's saying, don't be so right that you don't love big and love fully. People talk to me about you guys. When they come and visit, I send them an email every time someone comes. And I say, hey, thanks for coming. It's good to meet you. What'd you think? What'd you like? We're always interested in hearing from people. And you know what they say about you? You kind of want to know. What do people say behind your back, right? Now, granted, they're talking to the pastor, so maybe they'll tone it down a little bit, right? If they have something negative, maybe. They always talk about how friendly you are. That's it. That's what they talk about. And they say nice things about, you know, stuff that happens up on the stage and different things. You know, but then, you know what they always say? And they never say that I'm friendly, by the way. That's never in the emails. Never. They never say, wow, you know, you're so friendly. It was so nice to meet you. They never say that, ever. So, all right, truth and love. Maybe I need to have a little more love. Okay. They say that about you, though. They say, yeah, everyone is really friendly there. I don't care what happens anywhere else, right? This is the wonderful place that God has put us. So I want to say thank you. I want to say good job. And I want to say, let's keep doing this. Right? Because Easter comes and there'll be people in the room. And you'll think, I don't know that person. And for us to be people who live the truth that is balanced by love, I want to make sure we keep being known as that. This person that you don't know, who's sitting by themselves, right? The person who is kind of wandering in and not sure where to go. And you think, well, I don't know what to say. It's a little bit awkward. Yeah, love is awkward. It is. And relationships can be like that, but let's keep it up. Keep up the good work. I'm not going to give you a big lecture after telling you how good you are, okay? But let's keep that up. Let's make sure that we don't lose that. That's huge, and that's a part of the example that we have from God towards us, right? The truth is that we needed Him. The truth is that we're separated from Him. And the truth is that His motive at His deepest level was love for us. Truth and love. I don't know if this story is completely true, but I'll end with it. At the end of World War I, Herbert Hoover, who would later become President of the United States, this part of the story is true. He led the Allied relief efforts in Europe. Right? Because you're talking about war-torn countries. You're talking about starving people. And so the U.S. and other countries said, we have to feed these people. We have to love them. And so he led that, and of course later president and all that. But somewhere in the lore, I couldn't research it enough to say I know that it's true. But someone who is from Finland said, I think it is true, and here's how I think it happened. See, Finland was one of those countries that received from the Allied relief efforts, that received from Herbert Hoover. And here's what they said. They said that at that time in the language, and maybe it's not so present right now here 100 years later or whatever the math is on that, at that time that this word sort of crept into the Finnish language to be hoovered. That when you were hoovered by someone, it means someone was there and met your needs. Someone loved you. And someone from Finland, where I was reading, said, words come into our language very easily in Finnish. It comes in and they float out too. And probably at that time, this is probably really what happened. Because it was consistent and it was tangible and it was real. And so they would say, well, you know what? Bob's having a hard day. You know, I think I need to hoover him. What does that mean? Oh, I'm going to take him to lunch. Bob's having a hard day. I think I need to hoover him. Well, what are you going to do? Oh, I was talking about cleaning out his garage. I'm going to help him move stuff around. And so he'd say, yeah, it's a great day. So is it entirely true, every part of that? You can't go to Finland and hear the word hoover anymore. But there may be someone in your life, and they may need you to be there for them this week. And it may be someone who you don't agree with everything on. Maybe someone you're even a little bit awkward with. But that you could be the one who says, you know what, it's awkward, it's whatever it is, but I want my name to be love in their life. That's what I want, and I'm going to do that this week. So let me give you a tangible application on that. Find one person who's awkward, where things aren't all in harmony, and express love to them in some way. Because the name you will be, it won't be your name. It'll be God's name. Right? God is love, and this is what God's people do. They love. He said this phrase, in a manner worthy of God, in this passage, right? Not in a manner worthy of that person. Not in a manner worthy of what that person's lifestyle is even, or what that person's relationship with me, or what that person's said to me the last time. Oh, loving them in a manner worthy of God. You could do that. So can I. So let's take a minute. We'll pray together. We'll invite our worship team up here as we pray. God, we come to you, and we need to be in balance, in harmony with you, God. We need this, and we thank you that you have brought us into harmony with you through Jesus Christ. We recognize that's where the harmony comes. That's where the harmony remains, is in a relationship with you, Jesus. And so, Jesus, we want to just come to you and talk to you. Some of us are going to come to you here in this moment and surrender again to you, because it's been a while since we've really done that, since we've really agreed with everything you are and everything we are, and brought everything we are to everything you are. And so we want to do that right here, Jesus, to bring ourselves to you, the truth of who you are. And then invite you to come into our lives, and in our lives to be everything you are. And then we pray, would you show us how we can take the truth that we live and express it in love, just like Gaius did in this passage. God, would you reveal if there's someone in our lives who we could love in a manner worthy of you? Would you reveal to us that person? That person you want us to love, so we can be in harmony with what you want. We thank you that we're here. We thank you that we have experienced all your truth and all your love. And would you express it through us? In Jesus' name, amen.